Hi, this is Karen and Meg at Tranquility Tribe, and today we've got a podcast with Rory Haddon, who's a professional cricketer for Derby County. Yep. Hi, Rory. How are you?
You okay, guys?
Hi, yeah, good, thanks. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely, no pleasure.
Wonderful. So, Rory, tell us a little bit about how you've got to where you are as a professional cricketer.
A bit of a long, different journey to most, I'd say. Started out playing as a kid, you know, dad, granddad were both cricket enthusiasts, so it's kind of brought upon me. Started locally at Leek, started when I was nine, and then started probably when I was about 12 to transition into county age group stuff.
That's a bit young, isn't it? Blimey heck. Yeah. You must have been incredibly good.
I think quite a lot of people are put forward at that age. I think like 40, 50 people go to trials, which is quite a lot, especially at that age. Like you say, it's quite young. To be fair, I've always loved sport, whether that's cricket, football, whatever. I was always stuck in and active. And cricket seemed to progress further than all the other sports. And when I first properly started taking it more seriously, it was probably around 15, 16, I'd say. Started to get trials for Midlands age group, and then further went on to play on the academy at Warwickshire when I was 17. And that's probably when I first started thinking maybe it could be a profession. Become a bit more serious. Things started to become, you know, nutrition programs, gym programs, just other stuff other than cricket. And then
that's quite young, isn't it? So it's almost like it's trained you to look after yourself at quite an early age, especially during adolescence. I mean,
yeah, definitely. I mean, we had all these nutrition programs put on us, and then, you know, you have school dinners that really don't match them at all. I always found that, eating at school was probably the hardest thing, balancing that, because, you know, you don't really get a good meal. But like I say, actually looking after myself was more forced upon me, which is a good thing. Obviously, you actually get that education quite young. You know, having access to nutritionists, psychologists and all that is actually, I didn't probably appreciate it at the time because, you know, I was growing up, I didn't really think too much about, you know, what I was eating or whatever. Put me in good stead. And then
sort of looking back at that now then, how, you know, reflecting on going through that process, well, how do you feel about that? You know, what that different food, the nutrition? Is it so crucial, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Probably more for recovery than anything else. I think, you know, if you've had a, it might not seem it for people who don't know much about cricket, but you actually do have quite long days. If you have days where you're in the field all day, you know, I think the other day I covered up to 30,000 steps in a day, just being on feet in the field all day. And, you know, I think that actually is when nutrition post that day comes into it more, because in cricket, you got to go sometimes 4 days in a row. So getting yourself back up the next morning, getting yourself fit and being in a good physical place to start the next day, a lot of that actually comes down to, you know, the nutrition you have the day before, the morning, you know, your breakfast and all that. Even like supplements, stuff like protein shakes, you know, get it in the body quick and let your muscles sort of recover sort of fast. And yeah, it's a lot actually, but it does benefit quite a bit.
Wow. So that was a lot at 17.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be lying if I said I've probably followed all of it at 17. I probably didn't. I reckon I probably maybe learnt the hard way in terms of, I did take it fairly serious, but I wasn't like the be all and end all. But then around 18, 19, I had two pretty long-term injuries. I had stress fracture in my foot and a stress fracture in my back, which meant I actually missed a lot of cricket in them, well, quite crucial ages, you know, when you get to 17, 18, 19, the sort of your last years on the academy where clubs start to make decisions whether, you know, they're going to give you a contract or whether, you know, they're not. So probably didn't help that I missed a lot of cricket around that age, but yeah.
That must have been really tough mentally to kind of deal with that.
Yeah, I think the toughest part was that the injuries happened during the season. I think sometimes you can get injuries during the winter and maybe you don't think too much about it because you're not missing games, you're not seeing, you know, your teammates go and play and all that, but in the summer when, you know, you're still rocking in to see the physio and use the gym, and then you look outside the gym and everyone's playing, it's a bit tougher to take. But it's probably made me more resilient in the long run, but at the time, it was very frustrating.
And so what happened after that then?
Again, it was a bit weird because when I was 18, it was COVID. So that summer, the academies normally give you till you're 18 and then the club have to make a decision. But because of it being COVID, they extended me a year. So when I was 19, I was allowed to have another year on the academy. Again, struggled with an injury that year, but sort of did enough in the academy games I played in that the director of cricket at Warwickshire, he was like, oh, what do you want to do with your next year? I'd done my first year at uni at that point, and maybe my education, I don't enjoy as much as maybe other people do. So
I was very diplomatic.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. So I sort of said, look, I've seen quite a few lads go out to Australia and spend a winter there, and that's something I'm definitely keen on, you know, kind of going and doing. And fortunately enough, he was like, oh, that sounds great. We'll fund you. We'll get you out there for the winter. And then when you're back, come and train with the pros, and we'll give you almost like a trial year, because you've been injured this year. So I was fortunate enough to go and spend a winter out in Australia in Melbourne. And that was, unreal. A lot of growing up, I reckon, had to be done. It was a great experience.
And that was cricketing, being a cricketer out there.
Yeah, so I went and played for just a local team for 6 months. So I played Saturday, trained Tuesday, Thursday. I managed to have contacts to train with the state team out there. So I was still training with pros out there, once or twice a week, which was, again, a great experience. Mm. But actually being able to go and play games that I hadn't been able to because of injuries helped a lot. I was on grass, softer ground, and my body actually become stronger rather than training indoors over a winter and breaking down, which helped a lot.
That's quite interesting, isn't it, how much being outside affects the body?
Yeah, I think the toughest thing about cricket in the UK especially is in the winter you can't get outdoors because of the weather. So training indoors, your body gets used to, you know, that hard surface, slamming all the time, and then the transition for that to getting out on grass at the end of March where it's very soft. It's actually a big transition for the body to get used to, and quite a lot of people sometimes find that hard and, you know, gain injuries.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that create injuries?
Yeah, definitely. I think I was speaking to the physio at the club the other day, and it was the first time we managed to get out on grass in England, and he was like, this is the worst day of the year.
Wow.
Because a spike of, like, people getting soft tissue damage just because of how soft the ground is, it's like it goes through the roof. Thankfully, none of the lads picked up anything, which is good, but he was like, physio's worst day of the year.
Good grief. And I believe you've just been out to Spain as well to play in Spain.
Yeah, so we had a week's pre-season tour there. We were meant to go to Zimbabwe, but then everything that happened in the Middle East sort of put that on hold. So we were lucky enough to get a week out in Spain instead, which was still, you know, really beneficial. Bit of sun, get out on grass. And then the team were all together. We had a good week of team bonding as well, which was good.
That's brilliant.
Oh, that's fantastic. So are you ready to start the season now? Because what you're a bowler, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a bowler.
Tell me a little bit about bowling, because I don't really know a lot about bowling at all, really.
I'd say it's a lot of graft, especially seam bowling. We probably cover the most distance in a game just because of our run-ups, really. Obviously, bowling six balls and over. Sometimes you do between 15 and 20 overs a day, so you're looking at 120 balls of running in 20 metres, and you cover a lot of ground. It's physically quite demanding, probably more so than batting. I know there'll be probably batters that listen and say, you know, grow up. There's always that divide in a changing room, I reckon.
And you were saying to me earlier, 80 miles an hour when you bowl.
Yeah, so
that's fast.
I mean, some lads at international level are bowling, you know, 90 mile an hour, and that's ridiculous. You know, the top international bowlers can bowl up to that, and that's very physically demanding.
Good grief! So I would. Sorry.
Go on. I was just going to say, when you're in a match and you've got all the crowd there, how do you manage to keep your focus to, you know, hit that every time?
To be fair, it's my first year on staff, so I'll have to be able to start dealing with that, I reckon. I've played in front of crowds before that, you know, it's always like when the game's actually going, you find a way. I don't know, it's sort of natural that you focus, you know, focuses on the game and you don't really acknowledge the crowd that much. Sometimes in the longer format you do because you might get a bit more bored, but, you know, yeah. There's atmospheres at grounds that are really good. I think it gets the adrenaline pumping more than anything, which actually stimulates your focus more.
So, you know, with all of this, and, you know, I mean, you've done incredibly well considering, you know, your career so far. Obviously, look, we're putting this podcast out and we are very interested in getting a lot of young people to engage with the site. What sort of, you know, what would you be saying to them in terms of, you know, moving forward, inspiring them, you know, because I think you can do anything when you put your mind to it. And I think you're just amazing at what you've done already with your life, you know.
Yeah, I'd say I probably didn't think about it on a day-to-day basis. I had a goal and I sort of worked hard to try and achieve it. I always sort of used cricket as, what do I want to do? Do I want to play sport for a living? Yeah. Or do I want to, you know, go do 3 years of education and then go into a job? And I always thought if I could get myself to a stage where I was playing sport as a living, then that's something I absolutely wanted to do. And I would give myself, I think, I probably told myself I'd give myself till I'm 25 to try and make it. And then if not, I'd look at other things. And fortunately enough, it worked out. Like I say, yeah, as soon as I had that kind of ambition to try and play sport as a living, it was a lot of, yeah, hard work.
Yeah, I would imagine you've got to be very, very focused to achieve that sort of goal at this level that you're playing at now, this professional level.
Yeah, I'd say I worked hard, and I think to achieve stuff like that, you have to work hard when people aren't watching. Almost, it can be sometimes easy to work hard if, you know, people are looking at you because there's that extra side to it, but it's that, do you have the discipline to, you know, go to the gym when no one's watching? You know, it's November, it's freezing cold, cricket season doesn't start till April. Do you still have that discipline and determination to get in the gym or not? And I was very dedicated to it. I think what helped also is I found times to sort of not even think about cricket and enjoy other aspects of life and not sort of get overwhelmed by, you know, cricket, because I think if you do that, you sometimes actually harm yourself in terms of, what would the word be, sort of not having anything else in, like, sort of life to look at.
Yeah, it's like a balance, isn't
it? Yeah,
definitely. If you've got that balance.
I mean, other young people who, if they have an ambition, my advice would be, know, work hard when people aren't watching. And that if you know, it could be a cliche comment, you know, but I do believe that if you do work hard enough, then you will achieve it eventually. Sometimes you seem further away of achieving what you want than you actually are, and it's just, you know, keep going, and you know, fortunes will come
absolutely
towards you.
I mean, what are some of the struggles that you've sort of encountered? I don't know whether you want to talk about those or not, that potentially you've grappled with to get to this point in your career?
I'd say that, obviously, I've touched on the injury aspect, but it does put a halt on things. Probably, you know, also rejection in terms of selection and being offered a contract. I have had both. But in that rejection, it's not just giving up, almost, right, okay, dust yourself off and go again. And if you can do that, it actually becomes easier.
How would you sort of, what would you say to people that are listening to you, you know, around that sort of idea of rejection? Because it can really disable people, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it did hurt, you know, when you get told, oh, yeah, we're not going to offer you a contract, or, you know, we're not going to select you. It can be painful and it does hurt, but you know, there's something inside me. I used it as, I probably want to prove people wrong. And that was sort of my mentality towards it, of, right, okay, just because one person says it's not going to happen doesn't mean that it's, like, you know, over. If I can keep working hard and get another opportunity, and, you know, you never know who's watching. If I get another opportunity and do well, you know, things might progress, and that is what ended up happening. But yeah, almost I use that rejection as a, okay, right, okay, I'll show you then. I can do it.
That's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Pretty much how I've been brought up, to be fair. I think both my mum, my dad, my granddad, they've always, you know, been and supported me through sport. And when I faced that rejection, they were like, it's okay. Like,
yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
It can be quite personal, can't it, really?
Yeah, it definitely can. But they supported me very well and always kind of like reassured me, you know, just keep working hard. You'll get another go. And when you get another go, give it your best and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah.
So,
do you think that sort of gets bigger the higher up you go?
What's that?
I suppose the fear of not being picked, you know.
Yeah, I think obviously the higher up you go, the harder it is to get picked. As soon as you get into an environment, you know, professional sport, everyone in there is a professional sportsman, and for a reason. Mm. You know, they're all good at what they do, and that makes selection hard. I mean, you've probably got 22 blokes signed on our staff, and they're fighting for 11 places. So, you know, half of the lads are missing out, and that comes down to different things. It could be down to, you know, the environment, the what the pitch is like, what kind of the build-up of the team is. Do we want to pick an extra bowler? Do we want to pick an extra batter? Do we want an extra spinner? It's all different things. And I think you've just, if you're in that environment, if you can't, you know, face not being selected, then it'll be pretty tough, because it's sort of inevitable that you'll have, you know, times where it doesn't work out the way you want to, or you don't quite make that team. And that's just the way it is.
I think you've got to be careful at that point, haven't you, that you don't sort of spiral down. I would imagine that's quite dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's one of them where you have to try and stay as level as possible. There's always reasons behind selection, and if you can look at them reasons and look at it from not a personal point of view, sort of, well, put yourself in someone else's shoes and go, all right, that does make sense, and it's not a personal reason why, you know, you might not be selected or you might be selected, and look at it that way. It's, you know,
it's still hard though to keep yourself that level, isn't it? I mean, in terms of sort of ongoing work, then, you know, obviously you've got to keep yourself incredibly physically fit. You know, you're like a super machine here, you know. You know, in terms of your emotional level, I guess it's about being as balanced as you can be. But we've also got that mental level and that focus going on, haven't we? And when stuff comes, and it has a habit, doesn't it, life does, of just sort of nudging into us occasionally. You know, how do you, at that sort of level, keep that blinking balance and focus, really?
Well, the S&C does a lot with us in terms of keeping us fit, keeping us in the gym.
Is that imperative, do you think, the physical aspect to you?
Yeah, definitely. The season, when it gets going, is quite tough. Like I touched on, you can be doing, you know, 30,000 steps in a day, playing 4 days a week. You know, you got 6 games in 7 weeks, sort of playing 4 days and hitting them levels. You know, it can be physically demanding. So all the stuff we do in the gym, you know, over the winter, and then as we get close to the season, the loads become smaller, but keep ourselves ticking over. I think it's vital just making sure that we stay fit and we're strong enough to get through those long games and be able to bounce back and go again the next week.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So it feels like real teamwork with the different experts helping with the nutrition and the different elements of your physicality. And then is there a lot of camaraderie as well? Is there a good vibe between each other? Are you all kind of helping to raise each other?
Yeah, so definitely all the lads that are involved at Derby, they are, you know, the great lads. They're all positive. They all keep each other going. You know, there's lads who bring high energy to the camp, which is definitely needed in cricket, because there's days where you're tired, you know, you feel pretty flat, and, you know, that energy in the changing room, it's really good. There's lads who are good at keeping other people's standards high as well, you know, setting the bar, mm-hmm. in terms of fitness, discipline, and then the rest of the boys sort of follow, which is good. Definitely with all the experts as well in the background stuff, you know, the physios, the S&Cs, nutritionists, psychologists, all of them, they're really, really good. They obviously know what they're doing and they keep us in check. And, you know, when we get to the season, it starts to show all the hard work in the winter starts to pay off.
And I think there's something about how can we sort of take some granules of these wonderful nuggets and put them into everyday life. For everybody, really, you know. I mean, the physical fitness, obviously, if you're not playing at that sort of level, you are. But I think it's incredibly important to keep yourself fit, healthy, whether you're either going to the gym or whether you're out walking, you know, and everything in between that. It is super, super crucial for our physical body, isn't it?
You've used the words discipline and determination, which I think are just really key for when you want to start changing your life and making these positive changes. So I'm really taking that away from what you've said, that discipline and determination to be a better version of yourself and be healthier and happier.
Yeah, definitely. I think it does make a difference. You know, things don't just happen overnight, do they? I mean, if they did, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
Well, what would you ever learn?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what I would say to people who are, you know, just in everyday life trying to be active, it doesn't have to be going to the gym, four times a week. Could be, you know, arranging play paddle with your mates, or even playing a round of golf where you're covering, you know, you're walking 18 holes and you're just active in general, or, you know, walking your dog or whatever that is. There's different, you know, sorts of levels and types of physical activity, but I definitely feel that I'm probably at my most mentally fresh when I am physically active. I feel like maybe sometimes where I'm a bit down in the dumps is because actually I'm just sat on the sofa doing absolutely nothing, you know, watching Netflix, which, you know, everyone needs them days. But if it becomes a bit of a continuum, that's probably where I feel a bit down and low. And then, you know, to freshen up, I will literally, you know, go maybe play paddle for an hour and I feel a lot better. It's just, you know, is it the endorphins or something? Is that the science behind it? I don't know. Maybe I did listen at uni. Yeah. I don't know.
And what about people's sort of, you know, emotional health and their very mental health in terms of that focus? I mean, what sort of advice would you give to people that are listening?
Yeah, I think I touched on earlier saying trying to stay level in sport, but I think that probably applies to life. You know, you're going to have ups, you're going to have downs in everything, aren't you? So I think it's not taking it too personally. I mean, it's easier said than done, isn't it? Mm. Obviously, you know, when you go through struggles, it can become like you feel like the world's against you and all that. But if you can, you know, speak to someone, if you've got a friend, family, whatever, anyone close to you, that, you know, definitely helps.
I guess therapy's good as well.
100%. Yeah, definitely. And seeing like the bigger picture and trying to find positives in it, because ultimately if you can try and stay emotionally level, you know, it is massive. Mm.
I think that does affect, you know, your outlook on a mental level, of being able to give you that clarity of focus, that determination, because that you just, again, I think we're made up of many, many different things, and this is all about how do we balance everything we can to the best of our ability, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably for people in my age, my generation, social media sort of, it can be positive, it can be negative. I feel like social media sometimes paints a perception of how you should be, even though the people posting that probably aren't exactly how they put out to be. You know, there's different angles of things and ways of looking at things that might put young people or people my age where, you know, you see something, you're like, oh, I've got to be like that, or else, you know, I'm not successful, or I'm not happy. And it can be dangerous, especially if, you know, people are on the phones all the time. If that's all you keep seeing when you're scrolling, it can, you know, get in your brain and you're like, I have to be like this. And, you know, it's not always like that.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, the digital content, obviously we're never not going to be here again, I don't think, with this, but it really is, it's the most incredible stuff, but it's also having some very detrimental effects, I think, on some of the young people. Some people I've spoken to in the past literally are sitting on their phone for 10 hours a day.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. We did a sort of like a induction day for people who've just signed as pros.
Okay.
And we did a social media sort of half an hour talk with someone who was explaining, like, you know, lookouts for on social media and that. And one of them was screen time. And
right.
It was like the average screen time is going up all the time.
Yeah.
Like you say, sometimes 10 hours a day. And it's just like being aware of...
It's shocking though, because yeah. when are you living?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. But also the effects that it can have just on your mental state by just looking at a screen for that long each day.
Yeah.
Can affect your sleep. And, you know, when sleep's affected, it affects your mood. And it's just one of them cycles. So I try my best not to keep scrolling. You know, I do have days where I go on my phone quite a bit, but yeah. I try my best not to. Don't have that much social media. You know, I've got rid of Twitter, Facebook. Yeah. I just have Instagram and WhatsApp now. Yeah. Tried to limit that. I do have a timer for Instagram. Like, I think it's 15 minutes a day. And then it'll come up saying you've reached the time limit.
Oh, that's really good.
Which is good, which... you know, sometimes I listen to it and put my phone down. Sometimes I do press skip, I'll be honest, and keep scrolling. But
yeah.
It depends how long my day's been, I reckon.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's really good to hear that.
Yeah.
Because every time we've done a podcast, the conversation naturally comes at some point to social media and its effects. And this is the conversation of the time, because we've never been here before and we're only just starting to deal with the repercussions of that, and it's brilliant to hear young people are, you know, finding techniques and methods to get through it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, social media has lots of benefits.
Yeah, sure.
You know, sharing things, getting word out quick, promoting stuff. It's just, I think it's like anything in life, isn't it? It's a bit about balance.
Yeah,
not letting it consume you and overtake. You know, I've got a lot of, you know, friends who TikTok and whatever and Instagram and just, you know, sat on chilling in their spare time and they're just on the phone scrolling. You know, it's just, yeah, sort of what people my age have actually been brought up with. So it's not really knowing anything different.
I know. And, you know, that this whole bit about how you've managed to get up and do something incredibly different, for us, this is inspiring, really, because we want to inspire people to get up and not sit on the phone for 10 hours a day, but to do something with the lives, to find the passion, you know, to get out there and engage with life.
A North Star to follow and really find something that you love and then you go for it. It's just incredible. Life is such an adventure. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you can find something that makes you happy, then why wouldn't you try and, you know, do it as much as you can? Or if that could be turned into a profession, then go and do that.
And maybe that's your dopamine hit, whereas unfortunately most people are using the dopamine hit of the phone, really. And that's maybe we've got to create something different where the dopamine comes from huge amounts of different places than just on the phone.
Yeah. Don't know what the answer for that is.
Well, you found it.
I think that's just, I've always been active. Like I say, my mum, when I was growing up, she had the rule of, like, everyone was getting phones. I was probably in, like, year five, year six, and everyone was getting phones. I was like, Mum, can I have a phone for Christmas? No.
Good.
Like, 13. Yeah. When you're 13, you can have a phone. And I was like, at the time, I was like, Mum, you're just cruel.
Worst mum ever.
But actually, looking back on it does make sense because, you know, I learnt to, you know, just go play in the garden for an hour or whatever, kick a football around or, you know, get on a bike and go on a bike ride with my mates or something, which, you know, it's nice to be active, isn't it?
And
rather than growing up, you know, playing on your Xbox 5 hours a day.
Well, you're in the sunshine for a start. You're outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you were going through your GCSEs and A-levels and obviously your cricketing career was taking off as well then, that balance, how did you manage through that? And
it's
been very different to your friends and how they were approaching it.
I missed a lot of summer term at school with cricket. it like from a young age. I remember, I think when I was in year 8, so I'd have been 13, I think I probably did half the days of the term in and half of the days of the term playing cricket. And yeah, thankfully the school let me do it. I think that's because head of PE was a cricketer himself, so he was happy to let me go. But yeah, I always remember, you know, summer term is when you have like your proms or whatever, you know, end of year celebrations. And quite often I would miss end of year trips away with school because I'd be playing cricket. Which was, yeah, like I say, very different to everyone else in my class or my friends at school. In terms of exams, GCSEs, I wasn't the best student, but I managed to get through them. And when you are under 16s, it would have been, they don't put any fixtures on during the exam period. Right. So they let you do all your exams and let that take priority, which is good because obviously, you know, if cricket does fail, you know, you need something to sort of fall back on. And then my A levels was COVID again. Yeah. So I actually got away with one of not having to sit an exam.
Oh, fabulous.
I did BTEC sport. I actually did that because I had to do all the coursework and stuff. Sure. So that was a proper mark. My psychology was, I didn't have to sit the exam. So I just got my predicted grade, which I'll take. That was nice.
It's really interesting to kind of hear your approaches to things. It's really inspiring. I was wondering about dietary, and do you feel like you've hit a rhythm with what you have now? Do you have like a set menus that you follow, or
so? Food's put on for us during game days, so the club will, you know, do breakfast, lunch and tea for us, which is perfect because it hits a nutrition. You don't have to go buy food, you don't have to cook food, which I like. But then, yeah, I would say my nutrition's got better in terms of just trying to hit protein, carbs, veg and a bit of fat in each meal, and if I can tick that off, I'm happy. I don't really track calories because I know that if I'm playing cricket, running and going to gym on the same day, I've burnt something like 3,500 calories. So I can sort of not feel guilty about eating too much because I need to get it back in the body. So yeah, I just try and tick them four kind of aspects of the plate off. And if I do that, I'm pretty happy with it.
Mm, brilliant. That's amazing. Mm. So... anything else you want to do a deep dive into with Rory before we close this up, Meg?
I suppose just a little note, kind of interested on alternative ways of supporting yourself, any complementary therapies that you've accessed, or any
yoga-ish,
yoga,
meditation.
So,
breathwork.
We went to Pilates over the winter a few times as a club. The S&C got us in doing team Pilates, which was actually harder than what it looked. I went into it thinking it'd be really easy. You know, I've seen clips of people doing it, and it just looks like you're stretching on a board, really. Mm-hmm. And I come out of it, and I couldn't move. I was making, you know... weird noises whilst I was doing it because I didn't think my body could stretch, but it was really tough. And then the next day I couldn't really walk, so I actually have a newfound respect for people who go and do Pilates. It's a lot harder than what it looks.
That's brilliant.
Wonderful. Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming in. This has been just amazing, and you know, you're such an inspiration, I think, to people of your generation.
Cheers. Thank you.
Doing amazingly well, and thank you so much for doing a podcast with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.